Hello and welcome to this special science podcast from the 2011 AAAS Annual Meeting in Washington, D.C. It's February 20th. I'm Robert Frederick. In this short podcast, we'll hear about space weather and preparing for the next big solar storm, which researchers say could cause damage equivalent to a worldwide-sized Hurricane Katrina. Here's Science's Robert Kuntz.
This is Robert Kuntz from Science Magazine, and I'm talking to Dr. Thomas Bogdan, the director of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Space Weather Prediction Center in Boulder, Colorado. To start with, when you talk about space weather, just what kind of weather is this?
Space weather starts at the sun, and it takes the form of bursts of electromagnetic radiation, which we call solar flares, showers of energetic particles that often come after them, which are radiation storms, and finally large blobs of magnetized plasma, actually just part of the sun's outer atmosphere that it ejects through space and which lumber along and hit the Earth. And all of these forms of space weather have various impacts on a lot of the advanced technologies here that we make use of in our everyday life, such as GPS, satellite-delivered services, and of course, our need to always have electric power coming in.
So this week, the session was very well timed because a solar flare had hit the Earth. And as solar storms go, how was this week's event? How did it rank?
These were not the largest of storms. I think they garnered a lot of attention because they were the largest storms we've seen in about 4 years. The sun has an activity cycle, just like there's a hurricane season. The sun has its own activity season, only for interesting reasons that we're still not yet sure of. It's about 12 to 13 years in length, so we're coming out of a rather quiet period. And this event that we had, a radio blackout, was the largest we've seen in about 4 years. And it's probably just that dearth of activity that caught people's attention. But we should see more of this activity and certainly stronger activity in the years and months ahead as we move towards solar maximum around 2013.
How bad can these storms get? And what would be the effects of a perfect solar storm?
Great question. The largest storm that we know about, that we have historical data to allow us to quantify how big it was, occurred in September of 1859, and it is associated with Richard Carrington, who was a British astronomer at the time. This storm had all the elements of a superstorm. It had blackouts. It would have had, if we were doing radio communication, it would have had blackouts. It had energetic particles. It had geomagnetic storms associated with it as well. It was picked up on telegraph wires initially, which was our high-tech power grid of the time. And the telegraph operators realized they could start sending messages without using the batteries to power it. And then eventually they ran into fires at the end when too much current came in. The Aurora Borealis, which is the nicer part of many of these storms that we like to go out and look at, reached as far south as Havana, Cuba for that storm, and that gives you some indication of that strength. A recent study by the National Research Council felt that if such a storm were to occur today without alerts and warnings going out to the grid, and that would not happen because we do put those alerts and warnings out at NOAA Space Weather Prediction Center, but if for some reason they did not go out, the potential for this storm would be to probably wipe out over 100 to 200 transformers and cause collateral damage approaching $2 trillion.
Given that this is a problem, what can be done about it?
Well, a lot is being done, and there are two ways to solve many problems in life. One is you engineer around it so you're not at the mercy of the elements, and the other is you check your weather forecast and understand what's going on. And we're pursuing both in various areas. Our alerts, watches, and warnings can exploit that propagation time of these storms from sun to earth, which can range out to 3 days and sometimes for very fast events can be as short as perhaps 20 hours. That 20 hours, even that short amount, still gives power grid operators time to take systems offline, to forestall maintenance activities, or do other things that might otherwise put their grid in a vulnerable situation. With global positioning system, GPS, for instance, it's possible to use dual frequency GPS receivers, which largely remove the unwanted space weather effects of the ionosphere. Space weather and the ionosphere is actually the largest single source of positioning error for GPS, and it can be as large as half a football field during big storms, though in quiet days like today in Washington, it's probably no more than a foot or so.
Thank you, Dr. Bogdan.
Thank you.
That was Science's Robert Kuntz speaking with Thomas Bogdan, director of the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Space Weather Prediction Center. To follow space weather via the U.S. Space Weather Prediction Center, go to spaceweather.gov. This has been a special science podcast from the 2011 AAAS Annual Meeting in Washington, D.C. Special thanks to Karina Wu for her work on this show. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write us at sciencepodcast@aaas.org. The show is a production of Science Magazine. Jeffrey Cook composed the music, and I'm Robert Frederick. On behalf of Science Magazine and its publisher, AAAS, the Science Society, thanks for joining us.